Good morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. It's Friday, the 22nd of February, 2013, and I'm Eric George. It's 2 weeks, essentially, since we last spoke to Sam McInerney about the state of the AFL, and it's been another topsy-turvy week for the league, as it's just handed down its ruling on the whole Melbourne Demons tanking saga. I thought it was a pretty indicative handling from Andrew Demetriou and the way he's run the AFL. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to kind of discuss how we think he's gone as the CEO of the AFL and how the AFL's gone under him. So yeah, without further ado, I'll bring in Sam. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Eric?
I'm good, thank you. Slightly better situation to be speaking to than we had last time.
Yeah, certainly. Not my club this week, which is nice.
Yeah, you're a little bit less depressed, which is good. So yeah, obviously we had this slightly confusing, from all accounts, adjudication a couple of days ago now, where the AFL essentially said that they can't see evidence that the Melbourne Demons deliberately lost games, but they behaved in a manner that was untoward to the league or something in those kind of words, and have fined them significant amounts of money and suspended Bailey and Connolly. For, was it half a year or a year?
I think Connolly gets a little longer.
Yeah, I think he's out for
Connolly,
a year.
Connolly till round 16 and okay. Bailey for a year, or the other way around.
Either way, significant suspensions and a significant fine. What was your read of the whole situation, Sam?
I didn't think it was all that surprising, really. I think a lot of people tried to sort of make sense of it, and that was kind of where they went wrong. Mark Robinson wrote that footy supporters should feel insulted and confused, and that, you know, it just didn't really make sense. But I think essentially what we got was an outcome which left Melbourne happy and which left the AFL happy, and that was it, basically.
So just walk me through that a little bit further. How is this an outcome that makes Melbourne happy? Because they didn't lose their picks?
Yeah, well, I mean, Melbourne, as well as that, so they don't lose picks. There was talk they might lose premiership points, which didn't happen either. As well as that, they get to say they were found not guilty, which I think is a big thing. And it would have been pretty unreasonable to absolutely, you know, use Melbourne as the scapegoat for the league when I think we all know that, yeah, they probably all tanked, but they're not the only ones who have done it in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And why does this make the AFL happy? Because they can say that they fired somebody?
Yeah, I think given that this investigation basically started because it just got to a point where it was ridiculous, where everybody was saying there was tanking going on. Brock McLean said that Melbourne had tanked during his time there, and it got to a point where they had to address it. And I think, you know, football supporters and everyone else who's followed football, you know, in even the smallest level, kind of knows that it's been going on. But for so long, the AFL said that they didn't believe in tanking at all. I think after all that time, if they'd come back and said, we found nothing, they'd look like a laughing stock, and just look as though they still had their heads in the sand and that they weren't taking the issue seriously. Well, so basically they get half a scapegoat out of Melbourne. They get to look like they've done something, but without dragging down a team who doesn't really deserve it.
Yeah, that's true. There's not a whole lot to be gained from beating Melbourne while they're down in the dirt anyway. But the point still stands that, you know, judging from the immediate reaction, you know, from writers and stuff on Twitter, and then, you know, commentary for the next 24 hours or so, people were very upset with the outcome of this because they thought it was simply farcical to fine somebody that amount of money if you essentially can't prove that they did anything wrong apart from one comment that was alleged to be a joke in a shed. For you to say that the AFL's happy with that, I assume means you think the AFL doesn't care about that response.
Yeah, I think so. And you've got to remember that the people who are writing these things are writers who would love to have, you know, a linear storyline where this was revealed and that was revealed and this led them to this outcome, when basically the outcome doesn't make sense because it's basically come from just something which I think everybody wants, rather than, you know, the findings of months of investigation.
Yeah, I think that, look, I'll give it to you, Sam. That's certainly a novel take on the whole thing. But would you agree, at least, that this was a very typical AFL way of handling the problem?
Definitely. Yeah, I think issues that the AFL and Demetriou are interested in and want to follow, they go really hard on. But the things that they're not so keen on and that they don't think are all that important, they just kind of, you know, they just leave them be.
So it does make an interesting comparison to obviously the other main sports league in Australia, in the NRL, which under David Gallop, when he was the CEO, they obviously had a whole, you know, stream of controversies they had to deal with. And every time, essentially, his approach was to just throw it all out there. As soon as he caught wind of it, he was going to suspend people, he was going to fine people, he was just going to address it and not try and hide stuff. Whereas it does seem that the AFL is much happier trying to deal with things in-house, out of the public, you know, eye sometimes, and not immediately. Things don't happen quickly at times in the AFL.
Yeah, you might be right, but I think this is an issue where a lot of people really don't care. I mean, people know it goes on, and I don't think anybody really wanted Melbourne to cop anything much, because it's kind of been part of the game. It was worse when there were priority draft picks, which have been taken out in recent years. But yeah, I think it's something that people don't really care too much about. If it was something that people were really interested in, then the AFL probably would have to go, a bit more public with it. But I don't think anyone's really, you know, complaining about things that they keep in-house, unless they're a huge deal.
Okay. You suggested that, you know, you feel the AFL goes hard on issues that they, and I'm presuming largely Demetriou, feels concerning to the league. What do you think those issues are?
Well, I think one is obviously the match review panel, which has come about under Demetriou's reign, I guess, which everybody knows is just a really, really bad model that isn't sustainable, doesn't make any sense, and each week we have these farcical outcomes that lead to even more farcical as the week kind of plays out and people appeal, and then the tribunal sees it a different way to the match review panel and all of this. But for now, they just kind of leave it there and put it on the back burner because they're not too interested in changing it. I think another example is umpires not being paid as a full-time job, which would do a lot. Not, it wouldn't fix the problem entirely, but I'm sure it would lift the standards of umpiring at AFL level.
That's insane. I didn't actually know that, to be honest. I'm all for umpires getting paid more. But so you said that you think the AFL goes hard on issues that they're passionate about. So you think that even with this pretty consistent derision of something like the match review panel, that, I mean, what's the hope here? That it's just going to kind of, people are going to get used to it eventually if they don't do anything about it?
I think it'll probably have to go eventually. Either it'll go or it'll get better. I mean, it can't get much worse, can it? But for the meantime, it's not number one on their priority list. You know, they've had a lot to deal with in the last couple of years with expansion clubs and, you know, a few dramas as well. So I think that's something that they just brought it in. They weren't probably keen to spend too much time tweaking it, you know, right when it needed to be tweaked, I guess, last year and the year before.
Yeah, I mean, they do seem, with the rules at least, they seem to be keen on tweaking them mid-season. Obviously, last year saw that example of the sliding with the knees rule being changed during the season. It's tough, I guess, for players when you start twitching stuff midstream. With that essential image of the AFL being pretty aggressive in pursuing changes, and it's something that seems to have happened a lot under Demetriou's rule, would you, I guess you'd have to stick the expansion clubs under the same umbrella, the same kind of broad direction that he's pursuing?
They've definitely gone big, I think. You know, the AFL under Demetriou, they haven't cut any corners and haven't been afraid to make mistakes. They're not going to die wondering, you know. And it's been a huge couple of years seeing these two new clubs come in and the game basically getting to the point where it's now probably truly a national game rather than just a VFL competition with a couple of interstate sides in the mix.
You do get the sense that there is a vision for where he's trying to push the AFL, and you're right. I mean, he's certainly going for it hard. There's an incredible amount of, you know, negative press was written about the Gold Coast, written about GWS and the impact they were going to have on diluting the talent in the AFL and all that kind of stuff. But they've stood pretty tough by those expansion clubs, and obviously the AFL more than any other league, with its salary cap concessions and priority draft picks that it gives expansion teams, is pretty keen to help these teams get competitive. What other ways do you think Demetriou has kind of been aggressive in pushing that new model of the AFL is pursuing?
Well, I think you only need to look to the fixture this year to see that there's a game outside Australia for the first time ever, which is a pretty big deal. As well as that, I guess there's the digital pass, which we've just seen. It's basically been a really big few years in the way we look at footy, and the way it's kind of the public have changed it, as well as the changes on the field that you kind of alluded to. There's been a big difference in the way people look at footy, I think.
A lot of people mention the fact that they think the AFL is going towards more of an American way of marketing its sport. I've said for a little while that I think that the AFL Grand Final, you know, is something Demetriou wants to be like the Super Bowl of Australia. Do you think that holds water? Do you think he's looking to the US for inspiration here?
I certainly do. Meatloaf's, I guess, the example there of an American kind of influence that didn't work for the AFL Grand Final. But certainly they're trying to make the AFL more of a spectacle. There was a lot of talk about the things that were on the screens at the game, the countdowns before the game began on scoreboards. Basically, the way it was presented was pretty different to anything we've ever seen. And kind of follows that American model, I guess, of where you see, you know, music at basketball games and even at NFL games and things like that. So it's definitely heading down an American path, but at the moment, it's still doing a pretty good job at maintaining, I guess, the kind of grassroots footy culture that we've had from, you know, a historical perspective.
So, I mean, clearly a huge chunk of the AFL's audience, the AFL supporters, come from a select number of clubs in Melbourne. You don't feel like there's a sense from these clubs that aren't getting a lot of love from the AFL right now, that, you know, they're focusing too much elsewhere and they don't appreciate the fans that have driven the game for so long?
I think there was definitely a sense of that when the AFL were pretty keen for North Melbourne to move up to the Gold Coast rather than starting a new club in the Suns. But I think for the moment, the Victorian teams are here to stay, and as the competition becomes more national and possibly even more global, that can only mean greater kind of participants and audience numbers for everyone, I guess.
I agree, and I think that's certainly probably the biggest tick you have to put next to Demetriou's name for what he's achieved so far, is that he's managed to oversee a very lucrative period for the AFL, a period where they've done a great job of their branding, and they've done a great job of growing the game, you know, throughout Australia and even pushing overseas a little bit. So, would you agree that the AFL certainly prospered in those respects under his rule?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that will basically be what he's remembered for. That'll be the biggest part of Demetriou's legacy, for sure.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to the legacy at the end, because I think it's interesting to consider, you know, in totality, what he'll be remembered for. But I think in fairness, we also have to discuss the things that he hasn't done that well and that haven't gone great while he's been there. I mean, we've already discussed a little bit, you know, the fact that essentially the AFL has to be the most confusing sport I follow, whether it's the match review panel or, you know, recent adjudications. Do you think there is a real issue for the AFL in communicating its intentions at times?
There is, and I guess it's this, you know, this is kind of the bad side of Demetriou that people are critical of, which is, you know, his dismissiveness, I guess, when he just kind of doesn't let people know what's going on. And, you know, I just said I feel like his heart's in the right place and that he wants what's best for footy, but at times when they get something wrong, because there are these situations where it seems they jump to a conclusion before they go through a process, it just looks ridiculous, and it makes you wonder, how did they come up with that? You know, it's terrible when they get it wrong, because it just makes it look like they just haven't considered what they're doing at all. But I guess it's that whole idea of hoping that Demetriou's got some master plan and that it'll fit in with that and that he knows what he's doing. But it can be very frustrating as a fan when things are changing and you have no idea why.
In terms of an example I consider of the AFL being reluctant to admit that there's problems happening within the league and trying to deal with stuff itself, I'd look at the three strikes drugs policy that they've put in place, which is, you know, a controversial one within sports writers. I mean, you even saw one of the men's hockey players from the Olympic team come out the other day and criticize it. It's just the concept that the first time a player does something wrong, the AFL is the only people who ever find out about it, and, you know, they then disseminate news about it further down the track while they try to deal with it in-house, strikes me as a very Demetriou/AFL way of dealing with a significant problem.
I think you're right, but what do you think would be a workable solution in terms of what you know from other sports? Because as a strictly AFL guy, that does seem pretty strange to me, but I can't really think of a clear solution as I can with, you know, a lot of the other kind of AFL problems.
Well, I mean, look, you can look at it two ways. If you don't want to change the essence of what the AFL is trying to do and obviously providing treatment rather than punishment immediately, I think at least the clubs deserve to know straight away, because they don't find out on that first strike, do they?
On the third strike, did you say?
The first strike is...
The first strike, they don't. I think the third strike, only the... Or is it the second strike? Only the club doctor knows, even the coaches and stuff don't know, which seems strange.
I think at the very least you need to bring the club in earlier in the process. But I mean, if you compare it to other leagues, most other sporting leagues, if you get caught in that situation, it's an instant ban. There's no leniency involved there. It's not a significant ban. I mean, I think in the NBA, if you're caught, it's a handful of games. It's not that long, but it's still made public straight away. So that leniency is certainly rare in the world of sport. As an AFL fan, would you prefer to see Demetriou dealing with these issues in a more forthright way, or are you happy for them to be essentially kept behind closed doors as they are now?
Well, I think as a fan, you always kind of want to know what's going on, and you feel like maybe you have the right to know, and certainly clubs would feel that they have a right to know if they're giving someone games who's... I guess not putting in the work that the others are, that the other guys on the team are, or even if someone on the team, you know, needs help and has a legitimate drug addiction and that they can't, you know, be there to support them and work through it with them. It seems like, I don't know what the solution is, but that doesn't seem right to me.
No, and like I said, if it was a one-off example of the league trying to be progressive and outhandle the complicated issue and trying to help players seek treatment, then I'd have more respect for it. But it's just the fact that it seems to be more of a pattern of the AFL trying to hide the the black marks in its own league and trying to deal with stuff before other people find out about it, which is an approach that I personally think actually leads to issues festering at times if they can't be dealt with. That's the problem that I have more with that approach, is that it seems to be part of a wider spread culture within the AFL rather than even the policy in isolation.
It's interesting you mention, that tendency to, I guess, cover up. I hadn't really thought of it like that, because something that we, see a lot of is footballers' lives playing out in public that most of us think is pretty unfair. And I guess this is one way of where I guess that won't happen, where it won't be front page news if someone, smokes one joint once or something, which I can see why they've gone down that track. And I think a lot of people would have issues with a policy that named and shamed people straight away on the first strike, as I guess you've suggested in the case of the NBA. But I think probably, some sort of middle ground would be reasonable. I think certainly the club would need to know, on the first strike. That seems like a bit of a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, we don't need to go too deep into the whole drug policy. But at the very least, it's another example of a very progressive leadership that the AFL's had, and one that's been hasn't been, afraid of pursuing new alternatives to these problems. It's hard to imagine a league without Dimitri at the head at this point. He doesn't seem like somebody who'd be interested in stepping down anytime in the future. Do you agree that it's very difficult to separate Dimitri from the AFL that we've had over the last 10 years?
In terms of how the AFL's run, it's hard to see in different hands. But I think essentially what we would be faced with is either someone who does far less, and I guess a lot of the heavy lifting has been done. We've seen these two expansion clubs and all these new things brought in, the match review panel, the drugs policy. They've tackled a lot of big issues, so it's hard to see whoever comes in next having to deal with as much in the next few years. But I guess what you would probably get is someone who doesn't push the commercial aspect and the Americanization of the game as quickly as Dimitri has, but perhaps nuts out some of the finer points, which is probably what a lot of fans would want. I guess the other alternative is someone who just kind of completely takes the game and wrecks it and pushes it too far down this American path and strips all the grassroots element and raises ticket prices and takes the game away from the fans. So that's what I'm afraid of. Hopefully, I'm thinking, the first one would be the preferable option.
I can certainly imagine that second option is something that keeps you tossing and turning late at night. At the very least, I'm sure you'd agree that, Dimitri is the most famous of any executive in sport in Australia right now. And he's certainly the one who's, you can clearly see his fingerprints on the way the AFL works now. You can see his kind of machinations in what the AFL is doing. And I think, when you want to talk about legacy, it's going to be pretty clear to see, the impact that he's had on the game and the way his personality has kind of driven it over the past 10 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he'll have probably the biggest legacy of any AFL CEO up to this point anyway. And basically just the fact that the game's got so much bigger and that it's undergone such huge changes in the last few years. I think in the future people will definitely look back at Dimitri as either the guy who wrecked it or the guy who made it a lot better. But I think everyone will have an opinion on him.
Where do you stand on it at this point? Do you think the AFL is better off for having him in charge?
I think it is, but there are a few of the smaller things that just really annoy me. But I do think he's done The good definitely outweighs the bad. It's just the fact that they kind of overlook these problems, which have really simple solutions, which makes it really frustrating at times. But on the whole, I think, I'd have to say he's done a pretty good job.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, certainly. I think, most of the clubs in the AFL would agree as well, I'd imagine.
Except North.
But they don't have a lot to be happy about at this point anyway. The interesting thing I found over the last couple of days is knowing that we were going to talk about this. I spoke to some other, people I know who are really into footy and, quite knowledgeable and, very involved in the sport. And the majority of them all said that they hated the guy and that they think that the AFL is worse for the controversies that is brought in. So I think it's, it probably comes down to how you weight the issues, whether you think it's important for the AFL to be making the money it makes versus the, the match review panel and the other stuff. So it's going to be interesting at the very least to see how they bear out in time, which ones are more persistent in their long-lasting effects, because, that's what people are going to really remember. It's not what happens today, but what's going to keep happening in 20 years' time. Either way, I think that's more than enough time to speak about one man. He's got a big enough ego already, so we don't need to G him up forever.
He does.
Yeah, we've established that at this point. Thanks, as always, Sam, for coming on and bringing your brilliant footy mind to bear on another topic. And I imagine we'll speak to you soon, hopefully to preview in the season. So thanks again, Sam.
No worries. Thank you.
All good to have you. We will be back, as always, next week with another edition of the Sports Polygamy Podcast. Until then, you can follow this podcast at sportspolygamy.com. You can also find us on Facebook and iTunes, where you can subscribe to keep track. Until then, I'm Eric George. Thanks for listening. See ya.